Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to another Rollicking Good Times on Love Letters Live. If this were a book, it would be a page-turner, and actually it is going to be a book that we're talking about. My guest is David Fitzgerald, who is an author of some really interesting books. I'm going to go right to you. Just mention your last two and what your philosophy is, and then we'll talk about your new book.
Well, sure. My first book that I'm best known for, might be infamously known for, is called Nailed, 10 Christian Myths That Show Jesus Never Existed at All, which has made me a lot of friends, you can imagine.
Now, you're saying that with a smile, so it probably has made you a lot of friends, it has probably brought to the surface some people who were not so happy with you.
Both of these things are very, very true. Yep.
And the point is that I thought was kind of interesting that you're looking at something historical and showing that it wasn't, in fact, a history.
Exactly.
And that doesn't really take away from any religious feeling that people might have, you would think. I mean, they can still have a strong belief in a divine creator.
I suppose. I mean, for an atheist like me, it's no problem accepting the fact that, this is probably not true, and maybe we shouldn't waste so much time on it. But, I mean, I take your point. The question about Jesus, for a lot of people, it's not important at all because it's only important, you know, they already know what Jesus is, or they know who Jesus is, or they're on a first name basis with Jesus already, and so no one can tell them anything against that. So I don't want to come off like some kind of killjoy that I'm out to, you know.
And by the way, that's an important thing because I noticed when we first met, and I've known this always about you, is that you are such a joyous, open, accepting, loving person. And I don't know if the perception of an atheist is one of kind of a cranky killjoy, as you say.
Not at all.
No.
Thank you so much
for
saying so.
I just want to point that out because it's half your fun is that you are, in fact, so much fun. Okay. Talk about this book. And did this take you a long time coming to that you wanted to tackle this?
It's funny. This second book is the first book in a series called The Complete Heretic's Guide to Western Religion.
And that's your series?
That's this new series.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. I'm saying good. It is interesting.
And this book is on the Mormons.
And what's your point?
Well, the point is it's kind of similar to my first book. It's that it's sort of a part expose, part geographic gazetteer to the world of Mormonism. It's a very funny book, but it's a very serious book at the same time.
Now, but Joseph Smith did exist. I mean, it's not
Joseph
like
Smith
you're
certainly
doing the
existed.
Same thing here.
But once you get over that historical fact, almost nothing about Mormonism is what you would call true.
How do you find that out?
The fascinating thing is you go to the story, and the great thing about Mormonism is it came out into existence, you know, just barely 200 years ago.
So lots of recorded.
All the skeletons in the closet that Christianity buried 2,000 years ago are still around for Mormonism.
Do we have time to talk about what those skeletons in the closet for Christianity are? Just briefly,
for Christianity.
So people know what you're talking about.
Sure.
More.
For Christianity, it's the Christian origins and how the religion began. And for somebody like me, it's looking at looking at the evidence that we have for Jesus about what he really said and really did, and coming to the conclusion that, you know what, I don't think he really said or really did any of these things. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, in fact, that he didn't exist at all. And Christianity started very differently than how we think of it. That's a very long story in a very short nutshell.
So that book is called Nailed, and you can look for it if you like.
That's right.
Now talk about this, The Mormons.
The Mormons.
Is the name of your book. We should say that when people want to find it.
That's right. And it's fascinating. It's just, there's no two ways to put it. Mormonism, whatever you think of it, for good or for ill, whether you love it or hate it, it is amazing. I call it steampunk Scientology in the book, actually. It's just so filled with this bizarre origin story.
For those who don't know what that story is, do you want to recount?
Yeah, I will.
From the start, we got a few minutes here. Let's just.
I'll give you the official story because there's actually like five or six different versions of the original story.
So that's suspicious, right there, isn't it?
Isn't it though?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the story just keeps taking all these interesting turns as it evolves. But basically, in a nutshell, if you go to your local Mormon church and find out, you know, open up the Book of Mormon, the story you'll get is that young Joseph Smith in the early 1800s found these golden plates that were records of a ancient Jewish civilization in the Americas, and that's where we got all the Indians.
This is in upstate New York?
In upstate New York. This is all true. And that there was a thousand millennia long civilization of Jewish Christians in America.
So thousands of years before.
Before the white man
1492
came.
1492
yeah.
or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And they had elephants and steel swords and chariots and silk robes, you name it. All these archaeological artifacts that make its way in the story.
Also, they have the same thing that those people had
in
the Middle
times.
East in biblical times.
Yes. Except there's mistakes he makes, like the fact that they didn't have silk back then. Only China had silk in those days. They didn't have steel back then. This was thousands of years before steel was invented. Little archaeological mistakes like this that he had no way of knowing. They weren't real.
Oh, I see.
But
just
we
see.
Do.
Okay.
And
so,
in fact,
so he found the gold plates, and
yes.
Then what happened?
Well, according to Joseph Smith, they had translated them into English, and it turned out to be this amazing story of how Jesus came to America after his crucifixion and set up the new world there. And that's just a short version, because it's this whole epic sweep of thousands of years of very biblically stories taking place in the Americas. And the fascinating thing is it's so detailed and so lurid, and not lurid, but lush.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
florid.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much there, and it has absolutely no archaeological evidence to back it up whatsoever.
Now, is that what you talk about in your book, that there's no, what do you talk about?
Well, I talk about a lot of things. I start out with Joseph Smith himself and the origins of the church. I get some fun facts about where the church is today and
how
big it is.
Do you want to share with us whatever you can about his origins or?
Sure.
Let's just have it. Both barrels.
Let's do. Well, this whole church, which really is a billion-dollar multinational corporation, basically, run by volunteers and family members, it all came from the mind of one guy in 1800s, around 1805 or so, named Joseph Smith.
And what was his history?
He was a treasure seeker, a treasure hunter. He used magic
Looks like
stones.
He found one.
Oh, he did. He went around convincing people that he could find lost Spanish gold and other missing devices, whatever you needed to find, he could find it for you using his incredible seer stones and his magical powers. And that's where he gets his start. And from there, it just gets worse. He stumbles on the idea of writing what he called the Golden Bible. Talk some people into helping him translate it, talk some people into helping him get money to get it published, and starts his own religion in a time and a place, upstate New York, when it was called the Burned Over District because of the way new religious fads would come and go there. We got the Shakers came out of there. The Millerites, which became the Seventh-day Adventists, all came out of there.
What do you think?
Mormonism came out of there. It was just one of those crazy time and places when religious mania was really strong in that one particular spot.
Now, was there some indication that people were dissatisfied with Christianity as it was, that they went to this other?
I suspect that's what it was. I mean, this was like the generation.
What do they get here that they don't get in Christianity? Oh,
right.
That's
good
what
question.
I want to ask.
Well,
that isn't already there, since
right.
They're also worshiping Jesus.
These are all good questions. I think at the time, they were just up for any new religious mania that came their way. This was one of them. It had some interesting things to say about, Thomas Jefferson had discovered fossil mastodon bones, and there was all this question about where did the Indians come from. So all these questions were on people's mind, and his Book of Mormon answered them. He said, those aren't mastodon bones, those are elephant bones brought over by the ancient Israelites, The Indians that we know today, they actually came from biblical peoples, thousands of years ago. And he wasn't the first person to say theories like this, but he certainly ran with it, and that's where the Book of Mormon got a lot of its juice for its time.
And did he get people right away?
He actually did, was able to get a nice small group going, and that sort of just steamrolled its way over time. Once the church really got going, it started doing really heavy missionary recruiting, especially overseas in Europe. And bringing people over who were fleeing from the Industrial Revolution.
Your point is kind of that a huckster started this religion.
That's exactly it. And there's no two ways to say it.
But that doesn't take away, actually, anything. I mean, a huckster can start something and it can still be seen as... He wasn't saying, worship me. Although he probably could have. Right?
Well, I was going to say, there's lots of stories about Joseph Smith and his sex life, for instance. It alone is fascinating. Should we wait for that to go?
No.
Okay. The fascinating thing about Joseph Smith for me, personally, is you see that, A, he was able to do all these things that we would consider sociopathic, and yet it seemed like he, at one point, started believing his own hype, and that's why he died, basically.
How did he die?
The church would tell you that he died as a martyr in jail. By the hands of a mob.
You're skipping along here. Why was he in jail?
this is such a long story. Basically, it was because of polygamy, ultimately, that he wound up in jail. The doctrine of polygamy, Mormons are infamous for having this belief that you can have more than one wife, mm-hmm. or at least you used to be able to have more than one wife. That split the church even back then.
Oh.
And that led to him, this internecine war between the two factions of the church. He went and to a newly published, I should say, a newly created newspaper that was anti-Joseph Smith and destroyed the printing press, and that outraged the local.
Oh, so he did something vandalism.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay.
That outraged the local. Yeah. They thought this was treason. They thought this was, censorship.
So polygamy in a time where we are used to seeing that, and you see that a lot now with... same-sex marriages, and that a marriage is to be between a man and a woman,
right.
That implies one.
It does.
So
and
how
you know
does
what's
she,
funny
how
about
does he
that?
Get to the several?
Oh. Well, the funny thing is, in the Bible, they don't have that rule.
I know
that's
that,
not a biblical rule at all. Nobody, you can barely find anybody in the Bible who follows this eternal plan of God's that's a one man, one woman.
So how do we come to that? I know I'm off track here a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the problem with this book, is that you got so much going on, and this religion has so many, no matter how you slice it, it's mm-hmm. fascinating, Where were we? I completely lost my train.
Okay, well...
Polygamy.
Yes.
So, originally, Mormons didn't practice polygamy. This was only a secret that came up later, and the only people who knew about it seemed to be Joseph Smith and the women he was sleeping with. That's how special that doctrine
was. That is
was.
A well-kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
they percolated out to other members of the leadership, and then...
And those men liked it.
And those men seemed to like it, yep. But not everybody. That's mm-hmm. interesting. And a part of the problem was sometimes the women who Joseph Smith let in on the secret were already married to other men,
mm-hmm.
especially other leaders in the church. Like, he'd send them off on missions for years and years overseas, and then their wives would become his wives, too. It's all very sordid. It would make such a fantastic miniseries.
Wouldn't it?
It'd have to be on cable.
Okay, so we're hoping that somebody will listen to this who has a feel for that.
That's
that
right.
would be really interesting.
Give us a call.
So what is, you said then, how did the missionary work start?
It was an early thrust of the church, if you will, to get more people, because they needed to get more people. They were constantly getting kicked out from place to place.
Now, were there originally people that they would not let into the church?
Not so much, unless you count Negroes.
I do.
Yes. And that, I think, as an issue, I don't think that came
and
up
Native
at the
Americans?
Time. Oh, and Native Americans. Though Joseph Smith did encourage his followers to marry American Indians, mm-hmm. because then their children would become fair and delightsome. Yes.
To wash out the...
Yes, because as we all know, Negroes and American Indians have dark skin
right.
because of the sin
This sounds vaguely familiar
yes.
in my... Would you explain that?
Well, I mean...
No, I don't mean explain it, but just...
Sure.
Say what it is.
Well, yeah, they believed...
What is this sin that... Yeah. Well, so some sin made them dark-skinned?
Exactly. According to traditional Mormon
so
theology, what happened was, in heaven, before any of these people came down to earth, any of us came down to earth, we lived in heaven, and those of us who were faithful spirit baby children of the gods, faithful to Jesus... We became white people. those who were less faithful became black-skinned people, like darker-skinned people. And it's basically a sin-based melanin count. It's like the more sinful you were, the darker your sin.
I shouldn't be laughing, but the whole thing's so ludicrous.
That's the thing. It's so, okay. It's so Victorian.
How can you
it's
laugh
so
at a time like this? It's going to be
century.
Written on my tombstone. Go ahead.
Well, this is the thing, though. I mean, you get these ideas that are just sheer crackpot, totally racist, totally 19th century misogynist, and they run with it. They take it to the nth degree.
How are they getting over this now?
Well,
how are they getting past this?
I talk about that in the book, actually.
Oh, please.
In 1978, boop, their president
just
had...
Boop?
It just like that. He had a revelation from God saying, oh, yeah, forget all that. It's now blacks can be a member of the priesthood, which means they
can... A new
can,
revelation, and
a
nobody...
A new revelation, switch up. Just like a new revelation had fixed polygamy. It's like, oh, no, polygamy is not going to be an eternal covenant like we said it was. We actually have to give it up now. You know, they didn't use those words exactly. In fact, they said, you'll still be able to be polygamous, but only in the afterlife. That's how they get around it. But it's funny that all these splinter groups who have split off from Mormonism, and there's a lot of them.
What are they?
But, well, there's tons of them. There's tons of them. But
do they still call themselves Mormon?
Well, they do. They consider themselves the only true Mormons.
Oh, but the main church...
Mainstream Mormonism considers them heretics, even though it's the fundamentalists who have the scripture on their side.
This is so complicated.
It is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And that's all the way it is. The liberals... don't have scripture on the side. It's the evil fundamentalists who have all the weird
ideas.
Now,
when you say the liberals, you mean the liberal Mormons or just liberals?
I mean the mainstream of any religion. Mm-hmm. But it's not like against slavery. It wasn't the anti-slavery people who had scripture on their side. Only the slaveholders had scripture on their side.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that the people who want to dominate others
right.
and do them damage
right.
through this have scripture.
They can always turn to scripture
okay, so
to help them out.
That's a whole other issue that for me is huge is religion is the ammo.
Yes.
Which is a bad thing. I mean, religion as something to keep people in sight of some ways to treat human beings that are, you know, lovely.
Yeah.
Is one thing.
Right.
Now, so... That you are looking, this kind of has interested me since we've known each other, and I think I've asked you this before, and I guess I'm still asking it.
You could ask all you want.
I know I can. The fact that you look at this and you show that there are historical reasons that such and such isn't true, or so and so didn't actually exist, and I know that I've seen some late night shows, you know, if I'm up and around, and with priests actually discussing the fact and holding the view that there was no historical Jesus.
You know what's funny about that?
No.
One of the first times I gave my talk at UC Berkeley, there was a priest in the audience, at the front row, going, shaking his head, going, yeah. He came up to me afterwards and said, they told us all this in the seminary in the 40s. I was like,
that what? That the historical Jesus?
Yeah, that basically that Jesus didn't exist.
And so that doesn't take away from believing in...
Well, you know... Doesn't it? I mean, for me, it does. I couldn't become a Christian. I couldn't be a Christian knowing what I know today.
Okay, but you could be a Christian.
I suppose I could be a Unitarian.
All right. Or not having to have the physical Jesus there in order to believe and benefit from the precepts and the teachings.
Well, this is the thing. For me, it's not even a question of whether religion is good or bad, because clearly it's both.
Right.
It makes good people better and bad people worse.
Thank you. Say that again.
It makes good people better and bad people worse.
Thank you.
It's a catalyst. My biggest problem is it true or not?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's not true, we don't need
their
lies.
Oh, we can save some time.
Well, exactly. Let's cut to the chase and eliminate the middleman. We don't need to carry all this baggage around that doesn't work to prop up the stuff that does work, that we know works, you know.
Okay.
You know.
That is so clear.
Thank you.
And the same with... a huckster.
Absolutely.
You can be a really doubtful moral fiber yourself and stumble upon something that, if used properly, can help people live a better life.
Sure. And honestly, if religion was just an untarnished font of positivity all the time, I really wouldn't have that much problem with it, whether it was true or not. But the fact is, so much of religion... you have to find the diamonds in the dunghill, like Thomas Jefferson said.
Yes. That's like writing love letters to people who have not been good to you.
Oh, yeah.
Diamonds in the dunghill. May I just appropriate that?
Well, it's actually
because
Thomas Jefferson, but yes.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
He and I will allow that.
Because I always call that looking for, you know, nuggets of gold in the garbage heap.
Yeah.
And you get something really valuable then.
I can see it.
So go ahead with more that's in your book. What are some other points?
What are some things? Well, it's a book that's written for heretics like myself. So I talk a lot about where Mormonism came from, what are some of its more interesting and strange beliefs, sort of the skeletons in the closet, especially the juicy parts. And then I talk about how to talk to them when they show up at your door.
Do that.
Because they've shown up at my door. And, they are lovely people.
Aren't they, though?
Every one of them,
aren't
yes.
They, though? And
the Mormons I've known are lovely people.
Well,
actually.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here.
So what about when they show up at the door?
The one thing to do is don't kick them away. Don't send them away. This is a great chance for them. You may be the only person that makes sense that they get exposed to for the whole time they're missionaries. You know, because they are not in a happy place for most of their mission, for the most of their 2-year mission. So what you can do is be an ear for them to where they have to say, show them that not the heathen world is, you know, sinful and hateful.
Oh, that's if you're a heathen.
Well, as a Jew, you're a Gentile to the Mormons.
Well, you know, whatever you are, when they've shown up at my door,
yeah.
I have said thank you so much
yeah.
for offering me this. But I'm very happy with my religion.
And my
mother used to say that.
Yeah.
And they are so sweet about it. They agree and thank you and leave.
So who are they after? You know, this is what I'm convinced. The Mormon missionary program is targeting a demographic, and they get that demographic.
Uh-huh.
And that demographic is the Mormon missionaries themselves. When all the Christian kids are in college experimenting with alcohol and sex, all the Mormon kids are mowing the lawn and babysitting so they can save up money for that 2-year mission where they are just doubling down on their
religion. Oh, I thought you were going to say they're such a good example to the others that they get them that way.
Nope.
You know, like some of the...
I mean, that's the idea. But really, Mormonism isn't growing. Well, actually, Mormonism really isn't growing, despite the fact they say it's the fastest growing religion, like all the other religions
say that.
Mormons love to say that.
I see.
But the fact is, if it weren't for Mormons having children, their growth would be declining. And as it is, it's just barely keeping up. But still, I think they claim the last figure was about 13, 14 million. The active membership is close to 3 or 4 million. So there's about 3 times as many ex-Mormons out there as there are active Mormons.
And yet, when you go into the Mormon churches, I mean, in Utah and in...
Oh, sure.
There's a gorgeous one. Well, there's one in Oakland.
That's right.
There's one in L.A. They're beautiful. They seem to be doing very well.
Well, they've got a ton of money. As far as a business concern...
They
own a lot of property, for one thing.
Oh, so they started
property,
early.
Housings, yeah. If the Mormon church... paid taxes just on the non-church-related holdings that they have, we would be making so much money in this country.
Oh, I see. They don't have to pay taxes on anything?
Of course not, because it's a church.
Ah.
So even though they have insurance companies and radio stations and cattle ranches and you name it.
So they don't have to pay tax on the incoming bringing things?
And trying to guess how much money the church has is a real question. In the 1990s, we were saying it's probably at the very bare minimum $30 billion, and they're getting about $3 to $5 billion annually income.
Because they get on that.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But we'll never know because, as a church, they don't have to tell us.
Now, have you heard from anyone in the Mormon church about this book, like that priest who stood up and said, what?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, when I researched this book, I talked to a lot of Mormons and ex-Mormons.
Yeah.
And they were delighted. The ex-Mormons were delighted by it. I got a letter shortly after the book came out from a guy who had been a Mormon for 30, 40 years, I think, had written a 6-volume book on Mormonism and said, I learned stuff from your book. And I was
so
just
somebody wrote a letter
that.
To you. We're going to count that as the love letter theme for today.
There we go.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
So you've helped some people feel some relief. What is it that when they leave... What is it they're leaving?
Well, their experience is a lot like mine leaving Christianity.
Which is?
Which was that I felt like I had been lied to, and now I was getting at the truth. Because when you're brought up to defend the truth and hold on to the truth and, you know, resist truth, and then you realize that, you know what, I don't think this is true, it gives you a whole different perspective on it. I think that's why I'm the atheist I am. It's because of the Christian I was.
Because you were holding on so strongly to something that you felt not true.
Yes.
And disappointment. When, so that's kind
super.
Of...
Super. Well, ironically, my first thought was, oh my goodness, I'm just like the Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses. Boom, I'm just parroting what I've been told all the time. So it's kind of fascinating how it comes full circle.
So it's kind of love disappointed.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. It's a very good way to put it.
That's a hard thing to...
And now I sort of have a, you know, I wouldn't say a love-hate thing with Christianity, but, I mean, most of my family is still Christian. Most of my friends I grew up with are still Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't stop loving them. I didn't stop
did
becoming...
Did they stop loving you?
Some people did.
Oh.
Some did, but most of them didn't.
Yeah. Good point.
I mean, it's awkward. It's awkward, you know, when you're a famous atheist author now and,
right.
and talking about that at Christmas time.
So they can't just welcome you in as kind of a lovable nutcase?
I suppose they do.
Yeah.
I suppose they do. Oh, that's David. Oh.
That's what I mean. Oh, David's at it again.
Yeah.
Now, what about the Mormons who left were, you know, relieved and delighted? What about the other Mormons you spoke to who are still active and believe strongly in...
Everybody I spoke to, or was, I should say was willing to speak to me, at least had some problems with the church. And some people, you know, told me, yeah, I'm going to stick with the church, and but they still have the same problem. In most cases, it was, I don't think this is true. I don't think what they're telling us is true.
So you touch upon something that is really, I think, critical in a lot of areas, and that is whether or not basic facts are true, we can still... live by principles that benefit us.
Yeah.
But why is that? So given that, why? I mean, whether or not he actually found gold plates.
Or anything, yeah.
Or I mean, any,
yeah.
How does that affect?
And that's a great question. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. Because there's...
Apparently it matters to some people.
Well, I think it does matter. Because I think truth matters. And I think when you have truth... When you have something that's true, you don't need to prop it up with lies. And that's what religion does, is you've got all this baggage, all these parasites, if you will, that are jumping on board beautiful ideas. And not all the ideas of religion are beautiful. Some of them are just flat out wrong and harmful and
like
hateful.
What?
Well, like against women, the role of women in most Western religions, the gay people, homosexuality.
Oh, I see. Yes.
You know, it's like, it's great to be a Mormon if you're a white male, you know, who's straight, but if you're not a male, if you're not white, if you're not straight.
Is that spelled out somehow in...
Well, actually, yeah, it is. And their doctrine...
it says, actually, that if you're gay, don't come here?
It says things like, you can't practice it. It's like, you know, they've come a long way, and they're still evolving on that, like all the other religions are.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't... condone it, and they've got plenty of scripture to point to that's saying that all gay people will go to hell.
I see.
But just the way that their religion is set up, it only works if you are married and having children.
Yes, I see.
Being the best Mormon you can possibly be. And unmarried people, gay or straight, can't really go through the full program.
I see. Okay. Glass ceiling sort of thing.
Exactly. Okay. So, and that's why it was so important that blacks couldn't become a member of the priesthood. Because if you couldn't become a member of the priesthood, you couldn't eventually become a god like you can if you're a Mormon male.
Oh, that's a whole other issue.
That's
that
a whole other thing.
Talk about.
See, this is the thing. There's so
much
going on.
If you are interested in more of this, it's David Fitzgerald. And the book is called Simply the Mormons. And I'm holding it in my hand. And it's a rather thick, heavy, full book.
Uh-huh.
Part three is Skeletons in the Mormon Closet. Chock full of juicy. And, you know, I just want to end on that, chock full of juicy, because you've referred to juicy. We use that when it means something usually sexual, right?
And there's plenty of that.
Okay.
There's plenty of things that you will read and say, oh, I can't believe it. How did that ever happen? How did they get
away
with
that? In lots of areas.
In lots of ways,
juicy covers a larger spectrum.
I mean, in this would be great fodder for a TV movie event.
Maybe you could work on that.
I would love that.
Okay. Thank you for doing this with me. This is so interesting. And it's just always interesting to talk to you because as you are taking down one structure at a time here, you're not really hurting anything, it seems to me.
I'd like to think I'm doing the world a favor, really.
Thank you. Okay, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye for now. Thank you, David, for doing this. And also, just as we touched on, you know, some of the letters you get in life just in your natural course of events, like you, the letters you're getting from people who have read your book and saying thank you, those count as love letters. You're keeping those, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, because, you know, someday in 400 years from now when those are found, it's going to add to the history of what you're doing.
I love that. Actually, for me, I keep them because on those days when I'm beating my head saying, why am I bothering this? Those are what keep me going.
Yes, and that's the other part of love letters.
Yeah.
When you need them, they're there.
Absolutely.
And you can't reread a phone call.
Nope.
But these you can bring out. Okay, yes. Thank you, dear. Well, until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye.